Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts.
So you don't have to.
Online.
Here's John Williams.
Thinking big thoughts. It's a bonus, I think. Hi, it's John. We're in the Allstate Skyline studio. We're here weekdays from 1 to 3, Saturdays 10 to noon. Today we're live on WGNradio.com. White Sox baseball you just heard on WGN Radio. So you're listening to us now. Glad you found us. And remember, you want to hear the baseball game, that's on AM 720 WGN. But we appreciate you tuning us in here. We post a daily web poll question. We call it the News Click. Attention, potential sponsors. Yes, you too can own the News Click. Sponsored by your name here. We must be asking too much. This is a great feature. It's interactive. People like it. Yesterday we said a fan's okay sign at the Cubs game could be a white supremacist gesture. We gave you three responses to that. You know, Doug Glanville doing the game this week, and behind him somebody was doing the upside down okay. Some people say that's just a punching game. Other people say it's white power. You had three options. A, the team should suspend the ticket holder from Wrigley. 33% of you said that, but only a third. 40% of you said B, the team should first find out if the intent was racial. Assuming that if the guy said, no, I've got a buddy, we play this game on TV, you wouldn't suspend his ticket. I was in the first group. I said, regardless of what this guy's intent was, and I don't know that I'd trust his explanation anyway, which is a funny thing to say about something you know nothing, but there it is. I'm in the first group. I think if you do it, you're out. Cubs, it may be the White Sox or the Indians or somebody else can live with that, but the Cubs do not need another headache. Bye-bye. That's what I say. I'll bet you they can sell that ticket to somebody else. In fact, they could run a commercial right now. Attention, Cub fans. Two really good seats have just opened up. Option C was that the team should just let it go, and 28% of you said that. Hokey smokes. 28% said just let it be. Let the guy sit there. We don't just let it go. So, where I would have guessed that this one would have been pretty lopsided on the top, it's more lopsided on the bottom. 33% said, boot the guy, but almost as many said, don't even do anything about it. And the middle ground, 40% said, first find out what his intent was. I don't know, Lauren Lapka, did you have a view on that?
Well, it would be great to figure out the intent, because again, from what we were talking about, I had no idea that was a thing for, you know, white power.
Right,
and I have known about the game forever. You know, you see memes about it all over the internet. So it would be very awful if this person also had no idea what he was doing in terms of being offensive.
White power, yeah. Right. What a shame that that guy is now. And you notice he hasn't come forward, and nobody's come forward for or against him. I mean, this guy amazingly is anonymous right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sure he's going to get a lot of grief, you know, from people no matter what. So I understand that factor. The thing is, even if he was doing it for racist intent, why would he tell the truth? So, I mean, that's something you would have to investigate, right? Like, search his social media pages. Does he have any other connections that would make people believe that it was for that reason?
Yeah, that's a good point,
too. And is it worth it?
No matter what his intent was, he's going to say that wasn't his intent. So now how much ground have you gained?
Yeah.
Well, if you were the Cubs, do you see my point? In a way, I'm not even assessing his guilt or innocence. To me, the question is more, what should the Cubs do about it?
Right. I think they're making the right move. The best look for them is, say no exceptions. You know, we don't have any tolerance for that kind of behavior, whether they know they're doing it or not.
Not that it's the same thing, but the same week that Addison Russell comes back.
Yeah, and that's just also a bad look. So this is okay, but this isn't.
I know. So, I mean, that's the quandary they find themselves in. And I think, so not being wishy-washy about issues of ethics or or, you know, treatment of people. The Cubs need to be pretty absolute and pretty conservative about these sorts of things. You had at the beginning of this season, and we don't need to go down the litany of problems that the Cubs sort of invented for themselves, but Mr. Ricketts Sr., it was discovered, had a whole host for years of email he was trading with friends that were not flattering to him, his friends, or the organization. You had the Addison Russell thing. You had the fact that they were going to charge you to watch the games next year, and that the company they partnered with was that Sinclair Broadcasting that the FCC said couldn't own this radio station. So none of that looked good. So right now, anytime they get a chance to, and by the way, I noticed at Gallagher Way, is that what it's called? The little park at Wrigley Field. You know what I'm talking about? That patch of grass? So...
I have no idea as a Sox fan.
Oh, really? Are you a Sox fan? I hadn't heard. So, well, let me acquaint you. When you are standing in front of the ballpark, Clark and Addison, if you go left down the third baseline, that used to be a parking lot and stuff like that. Now they've got a big triangular-shaped patch of grass. And then, of course, they have this brick house, a big brick building named after Jack Brickhouse, where they have a Starbucks and a restaurant bar and all of that sort of thing, a gift shop. The World Series statue is on display there, stuff like that. So it's a great use of the space. And in that triangular patch of grass, kids get to play wiffle ball. In the morning, they have yoga classes for the community, and they stage concerts there throughout the summer. Ludacris is going to be on that little patch of grass this summer. So it's some names you recognize and some you don't. This year. And last year it was country and folk and pop, and it was just kind of a mix of activities and music. But this year it's sort of like they're featuring bands, singers, acts that are from a very diverse array in the community. So the LGBTQ and African-American and Hispanic, I mean, they're really sort of touching all of the bases of different subsets of the community. And it didn't seem so proactive last year. Last year, they were just, neither of these are bad options, right? Just put some country music up there, everybody will come, you'll be happy. Or jazz, blues. They had some blues guys singing there one time.
Yeah, get a variety, something
but,
for
right,
everyone.
But now it seems to be very protracted, like, let's make sure we touch this bass and that bass and that bass.
They're really addressing the image, yeah.
That's what it feels like. And I don't think there's any problem with that either, by the way, whatever their motivation is. 773 says, the Cubs know who that guy is. Send him a letter stating that if he shows up, he'll be arrested for trespassing. Yeah, well, that's a good point. The Cubs know who that guy is. I mean, you could tell where the seat was. The Cubs know who has that seat. They've banned this guy from the ballpark, so they know what that person is. But when I said the person has remained absolutely anonymous, you have not seen his name in the Tribune or Sun Times. He hasn't gone on the Score. He hasn't gone on Cochran's show in the morning here. He hasn't gone on with Roe. And you'd think that even if that guy doesn't want to, people know who he is. His friends know who he is. His friends of his friends know who he is. And in this day and age, I'm surprised somebody hasn't outed him.
I honestly have been thinking the same thing. Everyone finds the Facebook page, the Twitter page of these people. They look at like what they've posted 3 years ago and find ways to link, you know, look, this person's bad. Look what they said 3 years ago.
I hate that.
How is that happening?
As you were saying that, I pulled up Facebook just to see if I could search keywords, okay sign or whatever. And I'm going to see what I can find for you.
And if you find that person's name, I won't say it on the radio. I mean,
that's
go ahead.
Fine.
Yeah, I know. I suspect you're not the only one doing this. But I don't think it's fair to that guy, right? I mean, nobody was really injured. Doug Glanville said the appropriate thing. The Cubs are doing the appropriate thing. The guy's not going to get to go to the ball game anymore. So I think justice has been meted out. If the world finds out who this guy is and where he lives or what his handle is, he's gonna live with a world of hurt that I don't think he deserves. You know, that's not standing up for a racist gesture, but the internet will follow you forever, and it can be fantastically cruel.
Oh yeah, that if he becomes public and, you know, they really do connect like a racist intent to it, that guy will never have a job.
It's pretty amazing what can happen. I mean, you know what happens, too, is that when sometimes somebody has some transgression and then the Internet crashes in on that guy and somebody says, OK, here he is, get him. What will happen as often is that the people that were piling on the transgressor will themselves get piled on by people who say, hey, who are you? Why are you punishing this guy so much? And then those people have hell to pay. The Internet is unforgiving that way.
Oh, it's a battleground. A lot of arguments, you know, whatever.
I believe I know what the word is, yeah. Tom, you're on WGN. Hi.
Hey, John. You know, I wanted to call in because this is kind of funny, but I played football at Kent State University back in the 80s, and when I first got on board with the team, there was this game in the locker room, and it was called the Circle Game. So, comically enough, I'm watching the Cubs game, and I see this kid throw the circle symbol, and I'm not sure if you're familiar with how it's played. I didn't get to hear all of your comments.
I am not. I'm not.
Yeah, it's so, and believe me, it was new to me. I went to an all-boys Catholic school in Cleveland, end up at Kent State University, and this game's going around the locker room, and here's how it literally works. You throw this circle, and that's how they say it. They throw the circle. And it is literally that circle with the three fingers pointing downward. And if you look at it, you then receive a hit in the arm. And typically it's that big guy trying to just, you know, have fun with you. And they'll do anything to get you to look at it, like fall out of the shower room, you hit the floor and throw the symbol just to come over and hit you in the arm. And believe me, we had a very diverse locker room. It was never considered to be racist or anything symbolic. And funny enough, one of the guys who was predominant about playing this game still does it through Facebook. He'll fool you on something, and all of a sudden he'll shoot a picture, and it'll be that circle. And he's the least racist I know. I mean, meaning that none of these guys I played football had that kind of attitude. We were team. You know, we weren't them and us or anything of that nature.
So how do you... how do you do the payback when you're doing it digitally, though? So if I,
well,
if I see
kind of the comedy of it, you,
right,
you can't, and
nothing
he's just that jokester.
Yeah,
and,
right,
and believe it or not, you're supposed to, if you're quick enough, you're supposed to break the circle, which means you throw a finger in the middle of that circle, and then you can give out the punch. So I'm not lying. I'm sitting in bed watching the game, and I start laughing. My wife's like, "What are you laughing at?" I go, "That guy's playing the circle game on TV."
Oh,
I mean, that literally was my response.
Wow.
Nothing more. So how this ever has turned into... So I feel for this guy. I'm a Wrigley guy. I'm a Cubs fan. I'm a fan of sports. I don't believe this guy was doing anything racist or, you know, intentionally bad. It's being taken out of context. The problem is, I think it's a selected group that know of it, and I don't know why it's not more widely known, but 100 guys in my locker room for the 4 years I played football at Kent State University, they played it.
Well, let me ask you,
I
have
the wealth to prove it.
The Cubs say they tried several times, they called him, and he didn't call them back. Does that change your opinion at all?
It makes me curious because, again, I've never known that symbol to be anything on a racist end of things. My gut would be, is he just avoiding the response back to the Cubs because it's just ballooning?
Or he thought if he didn't call back, you know, maybe they were asking him if he was there, and
well,
I'll just ignore the call.
But I think Lauren was saying, and I tend to agree with her, that this is something he can't win. If it was a racist gesture, he's going to deny it. If it wasn't a racist gesture, he's going to deny it. People have already made up their minds about this guy.
Yeah.
It sounds like I'm one of them. But let me ask you this. When you saw that on TV yesterday or 2 days ago, 3 days ago, did you know that that was also a white power symbol?
Not whatsoever. I've never known that that was. I was almost going to Google it, and then I thought to myself, that's silly. No one is going to think that once they really dive into the detail. And so far, it sounds like there's nothing that substantiates that that's a game played amongst at least guys, I'll call it. But no, I was never aware that it had any alignment to something like that.
So that could have been
whatsoever.
You. That could have been you. If this prankster you're talking about, you might have thrown it on TV yourself.
Well, yeah, you're right. And the guy that I know, you know, he's an avid Cubs fan. He probably would have got a kick out of it. And we would have been laughing amongst ourselves, but now I'm that guy in the street because it looks like I'm hating this other pitcher.
You are the worst person ever.
Yes, right. That's only a rumor, John.
Wow. That's a great call. Thanks for joining us. I'm really glad you picked up
the
phone. Bye, Tom. Thanks for listening to us at WGNradio.com.
Right. I could see him saying, well, maybe they're trying to figure out if it's me, so if I don't take the call, then they might not ever be able to confirm that it's me.
Well, I guess whoever holds that ticket, though, confirmation or otherwise, it's been suspended, right?
Well, and that's the thing. Well, are those like season ticket
tickets?
Holder areas?
Yeah, they didn't say they suspended the ticket, the ticket or the seat. They suspended him. I doubt that those were his seats. No one, there are some corporate seats or something.
Maybe so. And this idea that he'll be banned for life, he'll be arrested for trespassing if he shows up, good luck on that. I mean, that's the rhetoric that team has to throw out, but if that guy wants to go to a Cubs game, maybe he doesn't, but if that guy wants to go to a Cubs game again, he'll get into the ballpark. Has a foul ball guy gone back to the Cubs games?
I don't know.
I don't know if...
Didn't he throw out a first pitch a couple years ago?
Oh, wait a minute. They invited him to the parade.
They gave him a ring, but that was a private ceremony.
Yeah, I don't know that he's been back to a game.
You're talking about Bartman?
I don't say that word.
Oh, sorry.
Sox fan.
I just wanted to clarify.
Yeah, but that guy, that's who I call foul ball guy. You know why I do that, Lauren? Because you talk about somebody who has made a pained effort to not cash in on his notoriety and to be anonymous and to, you know, Steve Bartman did not ask for any of that, right? He was just a fan doing what fans do. He was not a bad guy.
Right, yeah.
And his life was turned upside down.
Oh, yeah, like death threats and everything.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. So I, you know, and even now that everybody simmered down him, they won the World Series, and they gave him a ring for crying out loud, you know, his name is now associated with that curse and that crap, and he was the last guy in the world to want that. He was just a fan with headphones on. You can see a picture of him in your mind's eye right now. He wasn't a bad guy. He didn't deserve that. And so I've always personally called him foul ball guy as a gesture to his anonymity or desire for it. Now, I've many times reached out to the attorney that represents him on these sorts of things to ask him to come on my show. Ask me who the get is I want someday. I don't want to interview Barack Obama or Donald Trump. I want to interview foul ball guy. I want to put that thing to rest. He has not had a conversation with Chicago about what happened that day and what his life has been like since. And I'm not relitigating was he interfering or not. I don't care about that. But I'd just like to meet this guy.
Yeah, I'd be more curious about the life since.
Yeah, yeah.
I wonder if he even still lives around here. I'd probably be afraid to live in Chicago.
I know, because he's so recognizable. He's aged a little now, I suppose. But I'll bet if he was standing next to you at the Jewels, you'd recognize him. Because he's got that hat on and the sweatshirt with the headphones.
Just picture him wearing that every day.
I think he still lives in the area and works in the area.
Well, good for him.
Yeah, amen to that. It's 1:27. Elif said take a break. This is WGN. Sam Panionovich used to work here at this little radio station of ours, and there's a conversation being held in Springfield and throughout the state about should we have sports betting. And on the front page of the Tribune today, they make a very interesting distinction between betting on sports and betting on college sports. The Mincing Rascals talked about this. And I think Steve and I were of a like mind that betting on college sports is probably a bad idea. I mean, it's just another layer of profiting off of these kids who don't get to make any money.
Yeah, it's just another class of people getting rich off of them.
And it is another wave of temptation, right? I mean, all right, so too bad they don't get paid to play college sports, even though the NCAA makes $1 zillion off of them. But now a guy could drive over to Champaign and say, hey, I got X, Y, or Z, new car or used car or $1,000 if you miss a couple of tackles on Saturday. Cover the spread. I don't even know what I'm saying. But, I mean, I could see how a college freshman or senior might be inclined to be tempted. They're not making any money. And they're not going to go pro. This might be their one chance. Heck, maybe the kid himself will throw a bet down. So is that a realistic concern? So I asked Sam Panayanovich, who follows sports betting, to answer that for us. Hi, Sam. How are you?
King John, good to hear from you.
You're not mad at me right now, are you?
No, not at all. Not yet. I mean, we've got a couple minutes to go, but for now, we're okay.
Well, address my concern. Do you think it's a good idea or a bad idea to bet on college sports?
It's a great question. Honestly, it is. Let me just take you through what you can do right now in this country. So with Indiana signing the bill, the governor signing the bill, you can now bet legally in 10 states. Once Indiana gets up and running, we're in 10 out of 50 states. The only state that you cannot bet on college events in that state is New Jersey right now. And this is going to be a state-by-state issue. So Illinois, if they ever get this right, they'll be able to decide if you can bet on Illinois games or Loyola games or Illinois State games or Northwestern games. It's going to be a state-by-state basis. But what they've been doing in Nevada successfully for decades is taking bets on UNLV, on Nevada, on schools in Nevada, because the thing that I keep telling people, and a lot of these, you know, people running at the table to try and understand how this whole market works, if there was a kid at the University of Illinois, the quarterback takes a $1,000 envelope and throws the game, that is going to be so obvious because that is going to be bet, King. Here's why. Say Illinois is a three-point favorite, and this quarterback takes an envelope, or whoever, the kicker, the quarterback, the linebacker, that line is going to drastically move because the people that paid that kid the money are going to, they're going to bet the other side, and they're going to bet it heavily. This raises red flags with gaming control. This is why in Nevada, you have to have the proper regulation. You have to have the proper team in place because if the casinos are taking money on a loaded game, they are going to lose money, and that's bad for business. So I understand both sides of it. I mean, maybe you don't take bets in Illinois on Illinois teams. Maybe you do. But if you have the right regulation and the right monitoring team that reports this shady business, you won't have an issue. I talked to John Murray at the Westgate Superbook, one of the biggest and most popular books in Vegas. He said, we've taken bets on Nevada teams for decades, and we don't have problems because if we see anything wrong or we see anything that raises our hairs, we report it to gaming control, and that's how you stay ahead of the curve.
Do they delist a game then if they think it's suspicious?
Yeah, oh yeah, they'll take it off the board, so you won't be able to bet it. I mean, there were a couple examples, and ironically enough, the biggest issues over the past have not been, it hasn't been Nevada teams. I mean, even when UNLV was really good with Jerry Tarkanian, late 80s, early 90s, they won a national championship. There were never really any issues with UNLV because they're under the microscope, right? I mean, if you're going to cheat in Las Vegas at a Las Vegas casino, you're going to get caught. I mean, it's not hard to follow the paper trail. And if you follow a bunch of big bets on or against UNLV and you go back and you look at the game and you watch some of the plays, you can sort of put the lines together on where something went wrong and where something was maybe out of place. The biggest issue is the Henry Hill with Arizona State. I mean, but that, again, that got busted because there was a pattern of something that shouldn't happen that kept happening, and there was consistently big money coming in against this team. Vegas is not stupid, and gaming control is not stupid. So if you have the right people in place, this won't be an issue. I don't see an issue with taking bets on Illinois, Northwestern, Loyola. As long as you track it and trend it properly, I don't think there's a problem.
So if Illinois is playing Iowa, and Iowa's supposed to win by 7 points, and then you get to the Iowa quarterback and say, we need you to win by less than 7 points or lose, and he says okay, then you're going to bet Illinois a whole bunch, and if a bunch of people are all of a sudden coming in and betting Illinois because now they think the fix is in, they know it, and they're going to make money on it. Finish my thought process here. Then would that change the line?
Let me put it this way. I went to Illinois. Nobody's betting Illinois. Right? So all of a sudden, John Williams is running the John Williams sports book at Joliet, right? And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, after nobody has bet on Illinois for 5 or 6 weeks, we're talking people are betting $20, $50, $100 bets on Illinois, and all of a sudden you look at your ledger and, oh my God, there's $100,000 on Illinois out of nowhere. That's going to raise your suspicion, is it not? If you have 10 times the wagers or 20 times the money on a given team and nobody is bet, I mean, you can track all these things, John, at your casino. Whoever has a casino or a sports book you're able to see every single bet that comes in. They monetize the ticket count, which is the amount of bets. So here they are. There are 10 bets on Illinois. There are 20 bets on Illinois. There's $500 in Illinois. There's $1,000 in Illinois. All of a sudden, there's $100,000 or $200,000 in Illinois out of nowhere. That's going to set off an alarm, and that is going to get you to do your homework and dive deep. And then you look at the performance of the team playing Illinois. It's very simple. You follow the money, you follow the bets, usually you get the right answers.
So are you of a mind that, like marijuana in the state, it's better that we bring it above board because people are already betting these games below the table, right?
Let me put it this way. In the Super Bowl wagering pools around the world, there were $6 billion wagered on the Super Bowl this past season with the Patriots and the Rams. If you just take all the American dollars legally, we're at about $200 million. So $200 million of a $6 billion pie. Very small slice. So it's already happening. The market already exists. It's legal. It's illegal. It's happening in sports books, and it's happening in alleys and driveways. I mean, it's happening everywhere. As far as the marijuana, look, if it helps the economy, great. If people are already doing it, you might want to tap into that and be able to tax it. But you have to be realistic with the things that you're asking for. I think the biggest issue, to sort of take you back to sports betting for a second, there are several amendments going on right now with the bill. And one of the amendments calls for a 25% or 25% tax per bet.
Yep.
Now, what does that mean? So your average bet, you bet $11 to win 10, right? Or you bet 110 to win 100. If there's a 25% tax now at this sportsbook X in Aurora or wherever, now you have to go into that sportsbook, and to win 100, rather than play 110 with your bookie or with a legal book in Vegas, now you have to risk 125 to win 100. Are you going to lay 110 or are you going to lay 125? To me, the math is simple, right?
Well, 110 would be better for me, but if the tax is in place, then I'll have to pay 125.
The point is, though, that the black market will continue to thrive, though.
Oh, I see.
If I have an option between laying 125 to win 100 or laying 110 to win 100,
yeah.
It's very simple. It's like the old gas station theory. There are two gas stations by my childhood home, and when I would drive past, one gas station would be the, back in the day. I mean, this was, you know, $2.15 for a gallon, and then across the street it was $2.23. Which gas station am I going to go to? I'm going to go to the gas station that gives me the better price for my return. And that's the case with all these taxes now. Illinois is the one state that's trying to jack up a 25% on a sports bet.
What's New Jersey? What's the tax in New Jersey, Sam? They're not doing it to help people have fun. They're doing it to raise money.
Well, you're not paying 25% tax. You're paying 10%. You're paying 10 on a given game. Maybe it's 15%. So you're laying 115 to win 100, but you're not laying 125.
So you're saying that the black market will still be there for betting, even if we legalize it?
100%. And here's the reality of it. You're looking at a market that lives on credit. You know, you don't have to put the money down with a lot of these street bookies. And I'm not trying to be facetious about this, but a lot of people don't realize if you have a corner bookie or you have, you know, an offshore account or whatever, you know, you don't necessarily have to put the money up front. And that's why I think a lot of these markets, are going to continue to thrive because, all right, you don't have to settle until the end of a week or the end of a month. Whereas in Vegas or in New Jersey or Mississippi or West Virginia, you have to put your cold hard cash on the counter in order to put your bet in. So I think the black markets will continue to survive and thrive,
yeah,
because they're based more on like a credit system than they are on actually cold hard cash up front.
Well, in Illinois, if I wanted to bet on the Illini or the Bears, would I have to debit that immediately from my account? They're not going to float me on that, are they?
They will not float you. No, no legal operation will ever float you on that. You'll have to put the money down. And no matter what form of the bill gets passed eventually, and it will happen, I don't know if it's at the end of this month or maybe it's in the fall or maybe next spring, you'll have to put down your money to win or lose the bet. Obviously, you have to put it down up front, you get a ticket, you get a nice little receipt that has your bet and the amount you placed. But no, you definitely have to put it up front.
Well, what about a credit card, Sam?
Now, the credit card issue has been popular in Vegas. A lot of credit cards have been floated around. They've been trying to take these you know, credit card machines and implement them into their business, but most shops still are only cash. You wire cash, you hand them cash. Credit cards, I think, are a part of the future, but I think they're trying to focus on more of a debit model, so the cash immediately comes out. I don't know much about the credit debit authorization. But
well, but I mean,
a lot of
you said you're paying with your own money, and if it's a credit card, you're paying with the bank's money, and they're charging you 18% on that money. So it's not that money is not yours if you're paying with a credit card. It's your obligation.
Exactly. And I think that's the issue that a lot of these sports books are saying. Look, we don't know if this is, I guess the proper term is liquid. We don't know if you're using a credit card. Is this money liquid? Do you actually have this money? Are you just swiping and then kicking it down the road? There are a lot of spikes in this ball here, and it's fascinating to me because people, I mean, look at Bud Selig, for example. When Bud Selig was a commissioner of baseball, he talked about how sports betting would ruin the game. Sports betting is bad for baseball. Sports betting this, sports betting that. And now the new way, I mean, these leagues are partnering with casinos. You just have to do your homework, and I think that's one of the things that lawmakers in Springfield have not done a good job of, because sports betting, I mean, you've been able to do this in Vegas for decades, and it's been proper, and it's been regulated, and it's been all above board, but a lot of people are sort of acting like they know what to do, when in all reality, they don't, and I think that's why you have four or five amendments in Springfield. And that's why you have, you know, a congressman or a senator or a rep from whatever area saying, well, we want to cut. Yeah, that's not how it works. That's not how it's worked in Vegas. You don't pay 25% on a bet. You have to know how the industry works. And the way that it's been working in Vegas has certainly been a cash cow for years and years and years.
Mm. Well, that's all really interesting, Sam. This is all Greek to me. I was most concerned with betting on college games, and you've sort of at least allayed some of my fears on that. I don't know if any legislators are listening to this. You should lobby for the industry or something, because you make some interesting points there.
Well, I wouldn't fight anybody if you understand that there could be some issues with college sports. I wouldn't fight you to the death on that you have to take bets on college sports. But remember, every bet is tracked, every dollar is tracked. Yeah. So if there's something that doesn't make sense, we can follow that, we can track that.
But
and
most
we can try
people,
and make sense of it.
Outside of Michigan, Ohio State, Notre Dame, most people aren't betting college games anyway, right? They're betting the Bears and the Seahawks, stuff like that, right?
College football is a pretty sizable market, but I don't think there's a lot of people lining up to throw $1,000 or $2,000 on Illinois and Northwestern.
We're kind of immune to it in this state because, with the exception of Northwestern, our teams aren't very interesting anyway. So who cares? Northern Illinois has been interesting, but then again, that's not exactly a power conference.
But, John, I think you're assuming that people are betting on teams they like. People are betting on teams that they think they can make money off of.
Yeah, that's true, too. Right. So the Illinois State game might be interesting if you think you know who's going to win and you want to put enough money down to make it profitable.
You can't walk into Vegas right now. A lot of these smaller teams and smaller conferences like the Missouri Valley or the Horizon League or whatever, you can't walk in and bet $50,000 on UIC. You can't bet $50,000 on Illinois State. There are limits on these smaller schools. Because a lot of the bookmakers aren't that, you know, they're focusing on the Alabamas, the LSUs, and the Georgias, and they know every single idiosyncrasy of all these big major programs. There are, you know, 100, 200 football teams and 360 basketball teams in college. You can't possibly be on your P's and Q's with every single team. So depending on the size of the school or the conference, you have a limit on that bet. You can only bet $500 or $1,000 on smaller schools in Vegas because Vegas doesn't want to be liable. Yeah. On Loyola winning a basketball game.
Right, because you just can't know that team that well. By the way, as I let you go, Sam Panionovich, last time we talked to you, I think you told us how many games you thought the Cubs were going to win this year, and you were looking real smart for about 3 weeks, but now not so much.
Well, let's not overreact. I mean, like, you don't overreact to the first week or two of the season. You shouldn't overreact to a 16-4 or a 16-5 stretch. I still think, and I looked at the Baseball Prospectus numbers this morning, they still project the Cubs to win, I believe it was 87 games. Now they've been playing really well right now. I still think this division is so good. You look at the Cardinals and the Brewers, I think the Reds will be better. This is going to be a division that might be won with 86, 87, 88 games because they're all going to beat up on each other. Let's not talk about the Cubs beating the Marlins and, you know, bum teams like that. We'll see what happens when they play inside the division. I still think they're going to be there till the very end. I'm not writing them off. But I think they're going to be sweating. Cup fans will be sweating by the time we get to August and September.
Yeah, but
it'll be a tight race.
Wasn't your number like 78 or something like that?
No, I made the number about 84 and a half. I think it was the computer system that had 79.
Yeah, and
we both agreed that that number was too low. But Vegas had a number of, I think, 87, and I thought mid-80s would be good. No, they're going to be aggressive, too. I think at the trade deadline, they might try and bring somebody in. Their window is now, and when your window is now, you sacrifice the future for the present. So, yeah, they should be around 87, 88 wins. I was a little low, but, yeah, that no, 79 was ridiculous by the computer system.
I should have put $100,000 on that.
No comment.
All right, it's good to talk to you, my friend. Thanks for your thoughts and expertise on this, Sam.
I'll see you soon.
That man's name is Sam Panionovich. He used to do sports here. He was on the VSiN network in Vegas for a while, too, where they did sports gaming. Can you tell? It's 1:55 on WGN. You know what we haven't talked about, and we'll do this after the news, I think, is, well, I know, because it's my show, is the business of, I think the president is very wise about this. Pharmaceutical companies should be more transparent about the cost of pharmaceuticals. You and I always think about that maybe at the point of purchase or delivery, right, at the hospital, and then you get the bill and you go, wow, that medication cost $8,900 or whatever. But the president said that in the commercials, they should say how much the medicine costs. We don't do that to... I think the price of an automobile scrolls up on a car or truck ad, right? But when you see a commercial for clothes or shoes or food or sodas, they don't say price per ounce. We're more concerned these days about calories per unit anyway. But I don't know what that would look like when I see a Viagra ad or all of these commercials for all of these pharmaceuticals. Are they going to tell me per dose what the price costs? I'll bet they know. And that's probably a good idea, right? And we'll talk about that after the news. And the news is coming up. It's 1:56. This is WGNRadio.com.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Gotta have my gay game.
Here's John Williams.
Gotta get it on now. We're live on WGN Radio, which you knew, but we've been on the stream at WGNRadio.com. Because of the rain delay now, we're on both. So, hi, it's John. We're in the Allstate Skyline Studio A. We're here until 3. Maybe we'll get out of the radio way if the game resumes. Before then, remember, when you listen to us on WGN Radio and we go to the Cubs... Start again. 3, 2, 1. Remember, when you listen to us here on WGN Radio and we go to the White Sox game... We keep doing our shows at WGNRadio.com. So now we're all married and back in the same place. Andy Mazur is in our studio. And Andy, are they going to get the game back underway?
You would hope. I'm checking out the radar as we speak here. I am no meteorologist, and I do not play one on radio as well. But there's some stuff going through there still. It might be a little bit. That's my professional opinion.
Boy, you are not a
stuff going.
That
down.
Is the right. Worst assessment of a radar reading.
Tom Skilling, I am not.
God, what were we
so the leading edge of this front is still a little bit outside of Cleveland.
No, here's how you do it. You go, well, I'll tell you, the front's got an isobar.
The you've pressure gradients have changed.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And there's still a couple of heavy pockets embedded within these clouds.
Just shut up. Last night, by the way, we were watching, I think it was Channel 2, because then there was some tornado cells that came through LaSalle County. And so they had both meteorologists on at the same time, and they sort of interrupted. I think it was Amazing Race we were watching, and they were having so much fun with their computers and their stuff and their fancy cop equipment. And then they actually, at one point, I think it was Tracy Butler. Would that be Channel 2?
No, she'd be Channel 7.
It's Channel 7. One of them was off screen hitting the computer, and then the guy who was on the TV, he said, well, he wanted to go hit something on his computer, so he walked off the set. So now we're just looking at the set, and they're sort of talking, but there's an isobar over here. But they had it going on, and they were so in the moment of doing the weather. And because of these tornado cells that were rolling through LaSalle or Kendall County, it wasn't Kendall, I think it was LaSalle.
That's meteorology Super Bowl right there.
It really was, but I thought, okay, guys, I'm watching a show here, and they were sort of figuring it out live on the air, which kind of was cool. It was spontaneous. You were watching how they do what they do. But as it turns out, there wasn't that much to it. And so finally they said, okay, well, bye for now. We'll keep you posted. But it was just kind of an odd interruption. And if it had been a tornado, and if it had been where more people are, or mm-hmm. closer to the metro, the interruption would have made sense. But I guess weather's local, and if that was your weather, you needed to know. So I'm sure it was a wise decision on their part. Somebody texted in. They said, John, we were talking, Andy, about... I'll just finish this thought, and mm-hmm. I won't keep you any longer. But we were talking about sports betting, mm-hmm. and I said that the kids in college, if they're going to bet on college games, they don't make any money. The NCAA does. The universities do. Now you have a whole new layer of people coming in to make money on the kids, and yep. that's the sports gamers. And the concern was, if we are betting on college games, these kids aren't making any money, maybe they'd be inclined to take a bet. We just had Sam Panionovich on. He sort of dissuaded me somewhat of that theory of mine. I thought he made some good points. But somebody texted in just now and said, those kids don't get paid. My daughter paid $50,000 to go to college. They go for free. So there's that.
Well, that's a big thing, too. I mean, because exactly what your texter said there. I mean, you know, school costs money. And if you're not an athlete, you don't play football, you don't play basketball, you don't play... you don't run track or whatever, you know, you get the free ride to school. So that is like being paid basically $50,000 to $60,000 a year.
Yeah. The only people that get paid, though, free college are the football and basketball players.
Yeah, usually. Sometimes there's partial scholarships and partial rides for the non-revenue sports.
Baseball
and, you know, what.
Maybe track?
Maybe, you know, it depends on the school. It depends on how many sports they have at that point, but... You'll find some guys will get and some gals will get the partial ride, and you know, even that is worth $20,000 to $25,000
over the course of that
yeah, year. Yeah,
but it's not the same as holding cash.
It isn't the same as holding cash, but it's also not. It's also cash not going out of your pocket too.
I know, but yeah. It's.
But I get what you're saying because yeah. it's not even found money because you're not. There's nothing with it. You never had it.
Right, it's not like you can cash it in for some snacks.
You can't go and say, hey, I'd like to buy a car instead. You know, you can't do that.
You should just saddle every college athlete with like $150,000 in debt, and then it chips away the more they stay with the team.
There you go.
Oh, that's a good idea, Steve. All right, Andy. Well, thanks for your...
I think that was sarcasm.
Thanks for both the weather analysis.
You're very welcome. I'll try to bone up on that a little bit and give you some more later.
White Sox are losing 5-0. They're in a rain delay in Cleveland.
In Cleveland.
And as soon as the game resumes, you'll hear it not here at WGNRadio.com, but you will hear it at WGN Radio. All right, thank you, Andy Mazur. So here's that story we were talking about a little while ago. Pharmaceutical companies will have to reveal the price for many prescription drugs in TV commercials under a new rule announced by the President Trump administration yesterday. The requirement is part of President Trump's effort to crack down on drug costs, one of his few initiatives to earn wide bipartisan support. Boy, he's going to earn it for me. Under the rule, which is set to go into effect over the summer. How has this not happened before? I understand it was part of the original Affordable Care Act, and they talked about it for better part of half a year, and they couldn't for some reason get this included. Maybe the pharmaceutical companies didn't want it in there.
You think?
Well, then let's hear it for the bully in the pulpit.
The problem is it's like seeing a car price, you know, you don't know what you're really going to pay.
Yeah.
Because you don't know if your insurance is going to cover it and how much it's going to cover. I mean, it's still good to know, I guess, how expensive it would be without insurance.
Can you imagine? I mean, some of these things are so dang expensive. Now, I don't know what Humira costs. I'm thinking of the big ones that you see a lot of commercials for. We hear about the $35,000 a dose drugs, but those probably aren't advertised on TV.
I think I saw, John, that the top 10 range from like $450,000 to $16,000 a month.
Really?
I'll see if I can find that again.
Boy, yeah. Well then, so how would you do that? I think you would have to do it per dose.
No, I think they do it per month.
My migraine shot naturally is $575.
Per shot? Or per month?
Yeah.
How often do you get the shot?
Well, I have to take it every month, but thankfully my insurance covers most of it, but a lot of them do not.
But the cost, all right, so if you were paying cash, it'd be $575.
$575.
Golly, I'm sorry. I didn't know you had migraines.
I didn't either till last year.
And then they came, and that shot works?
It does. It works wonders.
Really?
I had chronic migraines to the point where I had a migraine every day.
Oh.
Every day.
Oh. My son went through them briefly, and you just kind of waited. You know, he'd go in a dark room or whatever, and wait for that thing to pass. You feel so helpless.
Yeah. Well, mine's a little different. I have vestibular, so I'll be very dizzy or have moments of vertigo sometimes.
Wow.
Rather than just the pain.
And do they know what causes that?
Well, from what I was told by the neurologist is it involves the nerves in your brain, right? So it's something's going on there that it's altering how you're feeling. So it all just kind of depends. Because I think the theory is they don't really know why people get them. They know, like, what causes the pain. But, you know, you can't see it really.
Why, yeah, but why is your brain doing that? Yeah. Under the rules set to go into effect over the summer, drug makers will have to disclose prices in ads for any medication that costs more than $35 for a month's supply. So if they advertised your stuff, then that would have to be made public on the commercial.
Well, if they advertise it on TV, and it's only TV.
It's similar to the current requirement for drug companies to spell out a drug side effects in TV ads, which is about 75% of the ads. You know, the scene where the lady's walking through the field and they say, this could do blah, 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 all of that.
Yeah, we'll see if it's more prominently displayed than that. So I found the list. According to the latest government figures, the 10 most commonly advertised TV advertised drugs have prices ranging from $488 a month to $16,938 a month.
I had no idea. See, this has already been beneficial.
But you don't know what your cost of that $16,000 a month medication might be. It might be $5 a month. Well, with your insurance.
Okay, but my number is 312-981-7200. You may take one of those drugs. Tell me what your out-of-pocket is. Here's the deal, though. I guess the theory is that'll pressure those companies to reduce the cost now that they have to reveal it.
That's what Secretary Azar says, yes.
I don't know if that's going to happen because you're already paying that price. Eventually you find out. And you and your insurance company are saying, well, I've got migraines. We won't go to the dentist, but by golly, we got to get that done. We won't get the car fixed, but we got to do that.
One of the beefs about advertising on TV, though, is that people all of a sudden take on the symptoms. It's like, ooh, I got that. I need this drug. And, you know, if all of a sudden you see it's $16,000 a month, maybe you won't feel that pain between your shoulder blades quite as much as you did before.
So it's a good thing?
So you won't go to your doctor and say, hey, I want to try.
Right, but I mean, so it's a good thing.
That could be a good thing. I mean, leave it to the doctors to actually prescribe medication.
I just think a little sunshine's good for just about everything. And now that you mention it, how is it that they got away with this all these years? They should have been. If they have to do it on car ads, when you hear car commercials, they always, and when you hear in the financial sector and the auto sector, when you hear a radio commercial or when you see one on TV, it's audio pollution, but they fast talk the disclaimer, but at least technically they get the disclaimer in.
I saw a reference to car. So do they have to give the car price?
I don't know why they, here's what they do.
There's zero down for blah, blah, blah.
Yeah,
but financing, yeah. But, I mean, just the list price of the car?
I think there's, if...
In fine print, I always see some base number.
I don't know, Steve, because here's what I'm trying to get my head around. And I know this is true in the financial sector, and it's been true in the auto sector. And that is, they don't do the price because of the requirements if they did. So when you see a car commercial, you might not see that fast talk because they won't even go there.
Because they'd have to justify the cost.
And then they'd have to tell you what options and dealer financing and kickback schemes. And so it does get complicated. But at some point you'd say, okay, let's come up with a rule, pick a number, and then that has to be your stated price. You have to tell me that.
Secretary Azar is the guy who said it yesterday that I saw. His quote was, prices of automobiles are vastly less important to your health and affordability than drugs.
Yeah.
So he made the reference implying that you do have to give the price of cars.
But if they say at the end of that, so in this 30-second hypothetical pharmaceutical ad, if 29 seconds of it is how it's going to make you feel better, and then at the very end you hear that, bum, 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 bum. That won't do.
And then they give the price in pig Latin.
I know. And they literally, listen, I know, I've been in the production room enough to know literally sometimes they'll take the 3-second or 4-second disclaimer it'll take to say prices may vary according to locale and see your doctor for details and all that stuff. And they compress 4 seconds of audio into 1.5 seconds. They do it digitally. There's a little wheel and you turn it to how much time you need to crunch it into. And technically you can say it was there, but it is indiscernible. You may hear something like that in the next commercial group I pay. And if I get to be king, they either won't be able to do that or they won't have to put the disclaimers on.
Right. So you arguing against yourself a little bit, King John, because
not too much.
You want to get rid of the disclaimers but you like the price requirement.
I don't like pollution. I think if you're going to say you have to say to the financial sector, the auto sector, the medical sector that you have to reveal stuff, then you can't speed it up or make it hard to understand. It would be as if you put it in a newspaper. They kind of do this, don't they? And made it so small that you needed a microscope to read the letters. That's what we've allowed them to do on radio and TV. And it makes a mockery of the requirement. Okay, so never mind that point. It says here, if it costs more than $35 a month, they'll have to tell you what the dosage costs. I'm curious what you're paying and what how they'd get around that. And would it reduce the prices? My number's 312-591-7200. This is WGN. Kathy, I see a lot of you are calling in. Larry, John, Philip. In fact, let's go to John first. John, you're on WGN Radio. What did you want to say? You're on the air.
Yeah, hi there.
Hey.
I heard Steve's comment about, not knowing what the price of the drug is until you get it. I had a perfect example. I was prescribed a injectable medication, okay, that I needed to take twice a month from my cardiologist. I thought, oh, wow, this is great. And then I received a phone call from my pharmacy saying, hey, before we fill this, I just want you to know that it's going to cost $6,000 a month for this medication. It was $3,000 per injection. I needed two a month. So at that particular time, I thought, well, okay, I'm going to go back to the cardiologist and say, look, let's go back to the other medications that weren't working and see if we can get them to work.
Yeah.
But then I found a foundation, actually the cardiologist found it, a foundation that was able to cover the cost of the medication, and now I get it for free.
Yeah. Well, none of that makes sense to me. If you can get it for free through a foundation, then it shouldn't be as expensive as it is. If it really costs them that much, then it should be that expensive, and then we ought to find a way to pay them for you. But this is insane.
Oh, you're telling me. I know. And then, to Steve's point, there was a perfect example where I was ready to go back and try a lesser medication that I had had problems with prior just because there was no way I could pay that kind of money for the medication.
Mm.
And one last comment, I will tell you, I've been on that medication now for maybe 8 weeks, and the results are no short of remarkable.
What's the drug that you're taking?
Repatha.
And what is it for?
It's to lower your bad cholesterol, your LDL.
And it's working for you, huh?
Well, I can tell you that my LDL, for those who care, was not out of range. Well, it was a little. It was 119.
Yeah.
Supposed to be around 100.
Yeah.
6 weeks after taking that medication, it dropped to 16. Yeah.
It might be too low.
And my cholesterol dropped in half, my overall cholesterol. So it's remarkable.
I'm glad you found that foundation, too. Thanks for the call, John.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Better that than $6,000 a month. You know what this means, Producer L? If you know those commercials we do here for Eurelium Life 9000, there's a disease called polytosis, and it's what happens when you hear too much political talk, and then your whole life is very upsetting to you. They're going to have to now put, we're going to have to redo these commercials.
It was getting so bad, I couldn't eat or sleep. I was worried about crazy socialists.
That's a disease called Bernie Sanderia.
I couldn't keep any food down.
That might be acute Brett gastrocavernitis.
All of this politics talk is getting me down.
And that's polytosis, a lingering disease that comes from too much politics.
Isn't there something I can take for this?
Now there is. And it's called Eurelium Life 9000.
Eurelium? Is it safe?
Safe? Why, it was developed by an ethnically blended group of serious people in lab coats working for a company so large and successful, their sous chefs have their own ping pong tables.
Wait, what?
Take Eurelium Life 9000 as a liquid, capsule, gel cap, eye drop, nose drip, ear burst.
Okay, got it.
Arm patch, IV, chewable briquette.
I'll do the gel cap, thank you.
Suppository.
Sorry I asked.
And the all-new, almost ready for FDA approval, home epidural kit.
That sounds like a really bad idea.
Plus, it's a rug shampoo.
I took Eurelium Life 9000 last week and haven't talked politics since.
Take Eurelium Life 9000 and say goodbye to anxiety.
Instead, we talked about that new massive hurricane. I couldn't be happier.
Always, always, always follow label directions. Close cover before striking. NLMS ID number 23, Skidoo, yabba dabba doo.
Yeah, that yabba dabba doo part is where they're going to stick in the price. And I'll bet you they're going to say it real fast. They better not! Time for a quick phone call. Barbara, you're on WGN Radio. Hello.
Hi, John. I take Repatha, but I take the one monthly dose, and it's $1,400 without insurance. I've been paying $320. Now, since I'm into catastrophic care, it's $64. Now, tell me, how can a drug company produce a drug for $320 and then produce it for $64? It makes absolutely no sense.
Thank you for the call, Barbara. I'm getting a lot of calls like this. Philip, you're on WGN Radio. Hi, Philip, you're on the air.
Yes, I take a drug that normally costs $476 a month, and I get it for like $33 with my insurance. Two things that people should do. John getting his drugs prescribed and finding out from his pharmacist that it was going to cost $6,000. There's no need for that. Every insurance company prints a book, and they show you that levels and tiers that your drug is in. You look for that level, and that's when you can determine what your price is approximately going to be. You call them, and they will tell you. I don't think it's going to help lower drugs, but it will help to position those drugs that are currently very expensive to a different tier to make them more affordable. It's hard to move a drug once it's established in a particular tier to go from one to another without doctors, your own doctors, writing letters, so on and so forth. So that's really the process.
Yeah, it's interesting. It makes you wonder what price they'll quote, right? Like if it's the $6,000 that's the retail cost, is it the $376 that's the insured cost? Is it the $67 if you're on catastrophic care cost? Yeah, it seemed to me like pick one, but I just, can you imagine what it would sound like if after showing the lady walking through the field while they're doing the disclaimer, and at the end he says, cost per month $6,000, and she'd walk right off a cliff. I will pause. It's 2:31. The reason we're talking about this is the administration says by this summer they'll require pharmaceutical companies to, for any drug that costs more than $35 a month, which is kind of all of them, they'll have to include the cost of the medication in a TV ad. I don't know if they'll have to do it in a radio ad.
No.
I'm just seeing TV.
Yeah, this is a TV thing.
Good for them. Good for them. I mean, this, yeah, let's go. Let's start tomorrow. Steve, you know, we've been talking about this administration push to make the drug companies reveal the cost of medications, the cost over $35 a month in TV ads. So if they're going to advertise on TV, $35 a month or more, which is like everything, heck, a 12-pack of Schlitz each week for a month would cost you $35. I don't know why I just said that, but anyway, they'll have to reveal that in a TV commercial. I think that's just a fantastic idea. But as we talk about this, and this happens a lot when we talk about cost of medicine, none of it makes sense, right? Like what you pay and then what I pay and what the insurance company pays, and then they lower the cost, and then there's these foundations, which I'm hearing about, that will also underwrite the cost of prescription pharmaceuticals.
Well, and then
it's
there's Medicare, right, which is a huge drug-buying operation.
Yeah.
Forbidden by federal law to negotiate with the drug companies for drug prices.
Well, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and so just imagine if they were able to use their leverage to say, you know, we're not going to pay that for this drug. We're going to pay this, or, you know, we'll pay this for that drug, but you have to give us a discount on another one.
I don't know if it makes me nervous or sad that we've come up with so many cures for the things that ail us, or isn't it remarkable? But I'm looking at all of these drugs that all of you are taking, and I think, oh, man, we are a drugged country. But then again, if you've got an ailment and the drug makes the ailment go away, well, why am I fighting that? So,
well, yeah, you're not going to pay. You know, if you have a way to bring your cholesterol down, you're not going to not take it, right?
Right, I guess so. Although then you end up taking so many drugs, and then you're, do you know anybody who's on a large enough regimen of drugs that they don't even know what's doing what now? And if they start to develop a new ailment, is that because of the mix of drugs they're taking, or how do you balance them? It gets to be very, very complicated, to say nothing of the costs. 847 says, last night on Chicago PD, the episode included a woman who had a husband that was stealing her drugs in order to get her well, since they cost like $44,000 a month or something. I don't suppose anybody's paying 44 grand a month, but there that is. And in fact, one of you sent me a screen grab of, I don't know where this came from your pharmaceutical company. John, this is how much my husband's medicine costs. We can't afford it. We always rely on those foundations. Just last week he was out and it made a big difference. He wasn't able to breathe well without the drug. But they went online to look it up, and here's the quote-unquote drug cost information. I'm reading from the web screen grab they sent me. The wholesale acquisition cost for each Uptravi, Uptravi, the cost for this treatment may exceed $174,240 per year. Each tablet costs $130 to $290, depending on the strength. I guess you got to take a lot of them. I take Lyrica, John, a commonly advertised drug. My copay for a three-month supply, two pills per day, is $150. I looked at my insurance benefits, and they pay $1,116 for the rest of it. Yeah. Well, when I grow up, I want to be a pharmaceutical company. I suppose they would tell me that they've come up with some drugs that didn't get approved and they had huge costs, and so these are all reasonable prices. John, my blood thinner, Eliquis, costs over $500 out of pocket. A lot of you are also telling me, here, Otezla, John, on Medicare, $900 a month out of pocket. I can't afford it. A lot of you are telling me that these drugs you do not take because you just can't afford the cost of them. And that's too bad, too. So if they put the price on the TV ad, what will the result be? I have no idea. I have no idea. Debbie, you're on WGN Radio. What did you want to say? You're on the air.
Hi. Yes, I'm supposed to have a shot twice a year. And each shot is $1,600. So I have it just once a year. I stretch it out to every 8 months. The company that makes the medicine, the shot, they do give me a coupon card, and they paid $1,500 of it. So at least I can have it every 8 months instead of. So I get it once a year instead of twice a year.
And who's paying that other part for you?
The company. I think it's the company that makes it.
So the charge is typically $1,600, but they give you $1,500 off.
Just for a year. They'll give me a 1 year allowance, but I need two. Shots a year.
Right, but so they're almost, if I may, they're almost then really saying that they'll take half of the money for the two shots.
Right.
For you, but then if someone has an insurance company that's going to pay the whole thing, they'll charge them the $1,600.
Right.
My insurance, it's not under my RX program, but they put it under major medical, so it goes towards my deductible, and my deductible is $6,000. So that's why I don't take twice a year.
If we had a
Medicare will pay for it, so I have another year to wait.
If we had a single payer system, if the government just paid for all of our medicine and all of our medical care, I wonder how this conversation would be different.
Big.
Thank you for the phone call. I'm glad you joined us. I'm glad you're getting that break, Debbie.
You know, people right away, they say, oh, my God, you don't want socialized medicine. It's terrible. You'll be doing this. And there definitely are good aspects to it. I think there are definitely some aspects that aren't as good. But, you know, I deal with people who are traveling in Europe, and I've sent people to hospitals.
Well, you know, on our trip that we were in England last week.
Yeah, right. And she came back very happy.
One of our listeners scratched her hand on a nail that was protruding from a board or something. So
yeah,
she's got a scratch on
it. Yeah, I don't have to get too into it, but she needed to go get it looked at.
She was gone and back, and there was no charge. And it was ironic because as we're driving around on the tour bus, courtesy of Steve Bertrand Travel, visit stevebertrandtravel.com. So the guide is just telling us about life in Scotland and England. And she says, we have, you know, universal Medicare here, medical care. You don't pay for it. Everything is covered. You can go to a private care hospital, but you don't have to. And she said the quality of care is good at both. She was an advocate of it. She says, and it's for anybody. She said, if you as a citizen of the U.S. here in England today need our medical system, you will get it for free. And we all just kind of, she said, but I'm sure you won't. We all laugh. The next day, one of our people did, and it worked out swell.
She was in and out. Yeah. Right? Not waiting 6 hours at an emergency room? Or
well, so my son lived in Canada for a summer, and that was the thing. They said, if something happens, you'll get it done, but you might wait 6 months. Where here in the U.S., we don't want to wait 6 minutes.
Who was telling you that, though? John, Canadians?
Yeah.
Okay.
Why? Do you don't trust that information?
No, I just want to, that means a lot more to me if it's coming from someone who's got a direct experience rather than someone who doesn't.
John, the actual drug companies also offer coupons or drug cards to cut the costs. Which this is all just shell game.
Yeah, that just means people who don't have the insurance to pay for it, they give it to them cheaper. If you're paying insurance, they jack up the price against the insured.
So listen to this. This lady says, my husband's Humira is $16,000. If you typed that correctly, you're telling me your husband's Humira costs $16,000 a month. He pays $5. Fix that, Donald Trump. make sense out of that for me, too.
Now, you know, there are big pharmaceutical labs where they're working on a lot of drugs and... You know, well, it's true.
I know that.
And a lot of these drugs are miracle drugs. A lot of them, they work on medications that don't pan out. You know, that you have to pay for that. But we do pay more, I think, than anyone else in the world.
Sue, you're on WGN Radio. What did you want to say? Hi, Sue.
Oh, Sue. Sorry, the Sue part got cut off.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're on the air. What's up?
I work for a pharmaceutical company, and... it's a lot more involved than you think. I don't even know where to start sometimes when people start talking about the cost of drugs. I've been in this business long enough to have seen probably at least 10 to 12 drugs that I thought I was going to be selling, taken off the market, or not even taken off the market, never make the market because during the clinical trials, there were problems that were discovered and they didn't even bring the drug to market.
Right.
I mean, that's one thing. Medicare, another thing is Medicare, I mean, the government pays whatever the lowest negotiated price is for a drug. It's not like the drug companies give some deal, sweet deal to the insurances and not to Medicare. I believe... and I could be wrong because there's a lot of stuff that I don't remember anymore, but I think it was something called the Omnibus Act of 1990, where it was said that whatever the lowest price is that a drug company offers anyone, any insurance company, they have to offer that same price to the government.
I see.
And then another problem is when people get, decide what insurance coverage they're getting, they often look only at what is this going to come out, how much is this going to cost, and they go for the lowest price, and they don't look to see, are the drugs that they routinely take, their maintenance meds, are those covered by that insurance plan? They go with these very low cost insurance plans, and sometimes they have no choice, I realize that, but sometimes they do, but they think, well, I don't want to pay a lot, for my insurance every month. Well, what that means then is that their insurance doesn't cover very much. So while, say, for instance, one plan on Blue Cross Blue Shield may cover these branded drugs, and the patient will only pay the branded copay out of pocket, another guy with a, this maybe even the same employer might have picked a less costly plan,
right?
But then his drugs aren't covered. So there's all of that, and then there are the coupons, which aren't a shell game. It's just one way to get people the opportunity to use the drugs, but people, A, don't bother to take the coupons to the pharmacy, or B, if the pharmacist tells them a price that's higher than what they think they should pay, they come back and tell the doctor it didn't work or it wasn't covered. Well, it is covered, but they just didn't want to pay maybe a $50 copay.
Well, you can understand people's confusion or frustration with this system. I mean, you're in the middle of it.
I do. And I have patients sometimes approach me in a waiting room, and I feel badly for them. But you can't even imagine how frustrated doctors are that we talk to every day because patients don't do what the doctors have suggested that they do. Don't exercise. Don't lose weight. Don't take their medicines. They'll come in 6 months to a year later, how did this work for you? I didn't take it.
High percentage of people do not take the drugs they're prescribed or even that they receive. It's amazing. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's huge. So you know, first and foremost, patient compliance would be a big part in helping this whole situation.
Sue, I've got to go. Sue. I've got to leave you, Sue. But one last thing, though. Do you like the president's idea of saying that they have to advertise the price in TV commercials of the pharmaceuticals?
It's ridiculous. You're not going to find anything that's under $35 except generic drugs.
Okay, but all right, so
cover what you need.
But then for most drugs, all right, so for all of the drugs that we see on TV, we're going to find out what they cost per dose. I don't see the harm in that, right?
Well, it's the cash price, and I don't know what the percentage is anymore, but it used to be only about 10% of people paid the cash price.
Yeah, I can understand how that's going to be confusing. If it makes sense, it's all going to have to be apples to apples. You know, they're going to have to use the same way to determine the price, and then everybody's going to have to follow that standard. Sue, thank you for the call, and I'm glad you got in, too. We've been hearing from folks on both sides of this story today. John, someone said this to me the other day, says this texter, would you want a doctor making $60,000 to do your head surgery in Canada, or would you want to come to the United States and have a world-class doctor do it? I don't know if I agree that the amount of money a doctor gets translates into the quality of care the doctor gives. I get your point, but people in Canada seem to be able to sit up and take fluids. They do seem to be handling it over there. It's 2:50. This is WGN. White Sox baseball. White Sox are down 5-0 to Cleveland in Cleveland, where it's been raining enough that they ain't playing. Figures that they could be playing here today. What a nice day we've been having. Rokan, Anna DeVlanta stroll into the studio in about 8 minutes. All of this talk about the cost of pharmaceuticals and revealing the prices. It's just, I'm just thinking about that entire commercial campaign we do for that one product called Eurelium Life 9000 that cures you of polytosis. Polytosis is the disease a lot of people have now where they don't feel very well because of all of the anxiety over politics these days. Fortunately, there's a new miracle wonder drug. The commercial campaign tends to be tied to specific events in the news, so I'm not sure if this is going to make much sense, but just imagine at the end of this commercial if they had to reveal what it cost.
I heard that as of this week, 1 out of 3 Americans are now running for president or mayor or are blogging or podcasting about politics. It's a little overwhelming.
She's got polytosis, and she's not alone. Americans are getting tired of all this political talk.
My friends promised not to talk about the president around me.
Maybe a good idea.
That was 2 years ago. I haven't seen them since.
Maybe they should take Eurelium Life 9000 too.
Eurelium? What's Eurelium?
Eurelium Life 9000 is an all-natural wonder drug handcrafted by an ethnically blended group of scientists wearing lab coats in New Jersey.
Will it cure my rash?
It will.
I'm having trouble sleeping, too.
That sounds like polytosis.
I've got headaches, stomach aches, and stress.
Try Eurelium Life 9000 as a pill, gel cap, capsule, eye drop, nasal mist, ear burst, time-release arm patch, ointment, suppository, cream, tonic, chewable briquette, now featuring Himalayan salt, or inject Eurelium using our home epidural kit.
Are there any side effects?
There are.
I'll engage in some lengthy activity over here while you list them.
Don't take Eurelium Life 9000 if you're allergic to Eurelium Life 9000. Some patients have reported dizziness, fatigue, and a woman in Kansas took Eurelium and now barks like a dog. Instances of tendonitis and spontaneous human combustion have also been reported.
Does it come in a cherry-flavored lozenge?
It does.
Then I'm in. And get me a gift pack for my friends.
That's Eurelium Life 9000. But that commercial, you'll notice, did not say what it costs per dose. What price to pay for a cure for that, eh? Anna DeVlantis just strolled into the studio, so you're going to be on the radio now.
We will be. Who amongst us hasn't been a little shocked when you get a medical bill or you're at the pharmacy and you're picking up something because you got something and you need something? And be like, whoa, that's how much? Are you kidding me?
I've had good enough insurance for the last several years that sometimes I ask. Like, I'll pick something up and it's $82, and I'll say, what was it really? You know? And then they give you a number that just, you go, holy cow.
I had a mammogram, and because I needed extra imaging, I just assume mammograms are covered every year. Well, apparently when you need extra imaging, you get a whopper of a bill for a routine mammogram. And so that one surprised me. And then I think we've all been a little surprised.
Well, yeah, and that's and you and I have insurance.
Yeah, exactly. Great point.
You know, how much complaining do we get to do? Some people get the retail bill and then say, oh, well, I guess I won't get that extra imaging, or I won't get that pill that makes that thing go away.
And you just do without, and that's sad state of medicine.
So if you know, does advertising the cost cure that? Probably not, but it still seems to be a good idea.
It seems that they're hoping that the pressure will be on for the drug manufacturers. That
right.
If you have to advertise, it's $376 per month, that there'll be a little pressure on you to say that may be too much.
Or at least be more transparent about the process. If, as the last caller said, a lot of these costs are justified, you could hear her going down that road, she's in that business, then fine. But do a better job of educating us, explaining to us why it's the way it is. Well, that's a conversation we don't need to have on the air.
Nope.
I'm done. You and Mr. Rokan are here. So what are you guys planning on doing here?
Well, we have... you know, it's funny because I just walked into the office about 20 minutes ago.
Mm-hmm.
And
your hair looks good. Did you get a haircut?
I did. Yeah, that's what I was, up to.
Is that really the best length for you, do you think?
Yes. Is what?
Is that the best length for you?
No, it's just a new length. Yeah. It's a, you know, you got to get a new haircut length sort of thing going. And I can only do what I can do. I'm doing the best I can here. So I walk in. I said to the producer, I'm like, hey, we haven't spoken yet today, Jeff, have we, about what's on the show? He goes, don't worry, I made something pretty for you. So we'll see what it is. And I'm just, it's just going to go as it goes.
You have such a good team. You've got a really good group
Thank
of people to work around you.
Thank you. That is really true, and I do appreciate them all in their own way.
So what did they arrange for you today, Ro?
Well, I just was handed the list. So we're learning this for the first time together, if that's all right with you. Mr. Ben Bradley is going to be with us. That's sort of predictable, right? We have him a lot.
He's good.
Yep. A.B. Mm-hmm. Stoddard is going to join us. We talk to her a lot. Jason Knowles from ABC7 is going to be here. Mr. Richard Roper is going to be here a little earlier, 4:30, which, you know, hopefully we'll be back on the radio at that point. I don't know for sure, though. Right?
Well, let's see. We're on the radio now. Mm-hmm. Rain delay. So hopefully we'll still be on the radio then. Or I don't know where we'll be at 4:30.
I don't know either.
It's very fluid.
It's a fluid situation, and I'm not in favor of fluidity. I don't like when my fluid's all over the place, and this is a situation where it is. Well, it is. Plus, a big news or ruse, and a pop-up Knarble wagon today.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
I don't know what that means. I mean, because it's on Thursday, not Friday?
Yeah.
Got it.
So I guess that's what that means. I don't, you know.
It's going to be good.
That's what they tell me.